But first today, I want to go to the CEO of the HSE, Paul Reid, who is joining us from our Athlone studio. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Paul, the Taoiseach said yesterday that our hospitals are experiencing their most terrible week of the pandemic so far. 50 deaths reported last night, 1,850 COVID patients in hospital today, 191 of those in ICU. To what extent are we now using surge capacity across the system?
Yeah, Katie, you just quoted the figures there, which are absolutely correct as of this morning. So we are right now, what our intensive care consultants would say to me is the whole system is completely tightening up. We have formally gone into surge capacity. The way that would work is individually some of the hospitals would have already gone into surge during this week, but we've now stood up our national critical care surge group, which literally gives oversight across the whole hospital system, across all hospital groups, mobilising the likes of our mobile intensive care ambulance service, where we need to transfer patients in between hospitals for intensive care. So it's extremely tightened up is the way I would describe it. If in terms of beds, we now have manned beds in terms of staffing and available beds. We've surged that up now to about 313. You'll be familiar, it was about 285 in total before we surged up. So we're at 313. We've 28 beds available for adults and 12 paediatrics at the moment. So it's getting extremely tight.
And have we had to transfer people to hospitals, in ICUs and other hospitals yet?
No, we haven't actually mobilised that, what I would describe as mobile intensive care ambulance service, to do that. But certainly what is happening at the moment is individual hospitals would be scaling up to surge capacity beyond their normal capacity. But where they can't go beyond that, that's where we would activate that process of mobilising between hospitals. But right now, our primary focus has been on creating capacity across all general beds. We have about 480 general beds available across the system. But if I could just briefly, Katie, I mean, I know the focus is understandably on ICU, but, you know, of those 1,848 of the 191 in ICU, there still are about 250 people, not in ICU, but who would be receiving kind of intensive supports, particularly in terms of oxygen, and sometimes high flow oxygen supports. And indeed, last night I was talking to Dr. Ross Morgan over in Beaumont, and you know, that's a very significant number of people we will be treating who need respiratory supports, advanced respiratory supports, in what we would call the, I guess, the orange zone or the amber zone. So, you know, significant supports before ICU.
And do we have any concerns about, for instance, our capacity in that line? Like, do we have enough oxygen? Because we saw in the UK that there were questions about hospitals running out of oxygen in these circumstances.
Yeah, and talking to even Colm Lachlan, one of our intensive consultants in the matter, the way our consultants would describe this phase now is different. It's more about the people and the treatment of the virus and the disease, because we are stronger now in terms of the, I guess, the infrastructure in terms of PPE, ventilators, oxygen, is stronger, much stronger than we were in the first phase in terms of preparation. But it is now about a critical issue in terms of how we manage the people, our patients. People are quite sick with this virus, and we are seeing families being treated. We're seeing young people being treated in the hospital. So again, it's a really strong message out to the public. This virus affects everybody.
Yeah. And in terms of staffing, Paul, we know 800 staff from the hospitals in Cork and Limerick are off duty this week because of COVID. I know Colette Cowan from the University of Limerick Hospitals Group saying that they are in an emergency situation in terms of staffing. What is your plan? What is the HSE's plan to cope with this?
Yeah, well, if I can give you kind of national perspective on it in total across both our acute hospital system and indeed our community and community services, disabilities, mental health, nursing homes, we'd have close to 6,500 staff out now, right now, but over 4,000 of those would be in hospitals. with significant pressure. We would expect to see a reasonable number of those staff. We're just monitoring, obviously, in terms of they would be positive cases of COVID and close contacts. We would be monitoring, and we would expect to see reasonable numbers of those staff coming back very shortly. However, as part of that, we have also redeployed, as part of our mobilisation plan around ICU surge, redeployed some teams to support ICU. I do want to assure our listeners, we are coping, but under significant stress. So if you do need care, if you do need urgent care, we're there for you. But what we've had to do in terms of staffing is, you'll be familiar with this, we've had to suspend non-urgent care in our hospital services. And, you know, thankfully, we have brought on some extra beds prior to the, as part of our winter plan. And we are also using and triggered the private hospital agreement. Right now, we would have about 125 beds supported in private hospitals to support us as well.
This is for non-COVID?
For non-COVID cases. Urgent care, yeah, it would be cardio care, cancer care. And just thankfully, we don't have the traditional trolley crisis that we would have. For our flow through of hospitals is stronger. We've about 78 trolleys. First, this day last year, we would have over 300.
Although I understand there is significant number of people on trolleys in Limerick.
Yeah, across Limerick and Cork would be our hottest sites. Has improved this morning,
Have we got to the stage yet, say, and particularly in Limerick and Cork, who are under such pressure, where patients are being treated in car parks and ambulances?
No, we haven't, Katie, and it's exactly what we want to avoid. When we're looking at the model numbers of what we may see in our hospitals in terms of COVID presentations, but also in terms of ICU. And we have been looking over the last while at the hospitalizations getting to probably about 2,500. We're not there. And our ICU for COVID patients of, you know, maybe one rising to about 250. Thankfully, we're not there yet. And we everything we can do in our power is not to get there. And indeed, everything the public do to help us not get there is really important. I just want to keep stressing that if I can.
Okay, can I bring you on to the vaccination programme in nursing homes? We know from your own numbers that the HSE has put out that of the 77,300 vaccinations that have been given to date, just 7,900 of them were to people in nursing homes. Can I just ask about that? Because I thought nursing home residents and staff were going to be the top priority. Did that change in those early weeks?
I'll just say in the introduction, I know we spoke about hospitals there, but we are also under significant pressure and our nursing homes all across the country. About 25% of them would have outbreaks. So very significant numbers. So our vaccination programme is key for us. I guess the first 10 days of the vaccination programme, we took the guidance from the National Immunisation Advisory Committee, which was to start it safely, effectively, securely, and a balance between frontline healthcare staff and starting the programme in nursing homes. So we have started to the ratio that you've just described, about 8,000 vaccinated. However, our programme now for nursing homes is accelerated between this week, the end of this week, and throughout next week. We'll have completed all nursing homes, having been completed their first vaccination, and indeed by the middle of February,
they'll have had their second
vaccine. So is
that timetable still in place? I'm thinking about the implications of yesterday's announcement by Pfizer that there were going to be a curtailed supply of their vaccine over the coming weeks.
Yeah, to be frank, the Pfizer announcement yesterday afternoon, we weren't happy whatsoever when we start hearing the first announcement from Pfizer. And I know it got escalated to senior government levels, and I know the Taoiseach made calls across Europe on it. Thankfully, the situation as announced last night from Pfizer is that it won't have the impact that was originally projected. We are looking at 1 week, which is next week, of a shorter supply, but then getting back to committed supplies, and indeed the middle of February getting to extra supplies. So I think the interventions at European level helped. But just to...
So who won't be getting their vaccine next week then, if we're looking at that fall off in supplies? Frontline workers, healthcare workers, have to wait now, yeah, if you're prioritising the nursing homes?
Yeah, well, just to assure your people in nursing homes, residents and families, that programme continues as planned. The plan for this week and next week continues as we would have planned. So our plan primarily for next week was nursing homes, and that was the primary focus. And it was the following week we will be reverting back to primary healthcare workers in acute and community settings. So the plan continues as projected next week, and we'll obviously have to recalibrate the following week based on a 1 week less supply.
But who loses out in that scenario?
Well, in essence, the following week we will have done the private nursing home, so that will be completed. There will be no impact. It will just mean a lesser volume as we move back to healthcare workers for that week. But it is a much smaller impact than we would have projected, and we're in a better place than we thought we were yesterday afternoon.
Okay, well, that's good news. At least we'll hang on to every bit of good news we can get. There's three mass vaccination centres operating, as I understand it, today in City West, in Dublin, in Galway, and in Portlaoise. How far advanced are we in terms of securing the other 12 centres that are proposed?
Yeah, very pleased to say the three mass vaccination centres which we've set up today, which is primarily utilising the Moderna vaccine, the 3,600 vaccines we got. So over this weekend, targeting between the mass vaccination centres and indeed some nursing homes, some GPs and practice nurses from their practices will be vaccinated. I'm pleased to say it's going extremely well in those three sites you mentioned, St Mary's, Merlin Park and the Collational Hotel in Portlaoise. And they are 10-bay sites. And just to come back to your question about how many in the future, but what we are piloting this weekend is they are 10-bay sites in each one of those, vaccinating about between 40 and 60 persons per hour, supported by our National Ambulance Services, Defence Forces and the DGPs. So the wider programme of mobilising for that is currently being finalised between our own estates, property people, looking at mass vaccination centres across the country and the workforce to do that. We will also be...
But can I just ask you the question, Paul, was when? Mm. When are we going to see those up and running?
Well, it's largely a function of the supply, Katie. So once we, if we look forward into quarter one, our primary supply across, and hopefully the AstraZeneca approval at EMA, our primary cohorts are in the first instance complete the programme for nursing homes, staff and residents. Also then the primary cohort of workforce is about 150,000 healthcare workers. And then the third important cohort is the 500,000 who will be older persons not in living in long-term care facilities. And that's the primary focus. And that's why we are vaccinating, working with GPs and pharmacies in the coming days and weeks to prepare for that.
Okay.
That's the next element.
Okay. And can I ask you then about the Beacon? A lot of controversy blown up over the last 24 hours in particular about the use of the Beacon as a vaccination centre. I know the Taoiseach is saying yesterday that you should review this, you know, because the Beacon didn't pull on the green jersey and sign up to the deal to provide beds in this emergency.
Yeah, can I just, in answering your question, just take the two pieces separately, because in terms of the vaccination centre and then signing up to the private agreement, because the two issues have come together this week, and I can understand people's concern on this one. But on the first one, which is the signing up to the private hospital agreement, which we're referring to as safety net, we've had very constructive discussions with all private hospitals over the past 2 weeks. Very pleased to say 17 of the 18 private hospitals have now signed up to that safety net agreement, which gives us capacity of up to 30%, but can go beyond that as required. However, I do have to genuinely express my extreme frustration that the Beacon hasn't signed up to that agreement. I mean, we have our public health system facing the biggest crisis probably in the history of the state for our health services. We have a team of fantastic team of people all across our hospitals, including private, working relentlessly. But we are racing to save people's lives here. And, you know, it is beyond frustration for me. It's beyond belief and comprehension. And I would be urging their board to sign up to the safety net agreement. Now, separately, if I can, Katie, just address the vaccination centre.
Yeah, go on.
So the issue of the vaccination centre, we're working on in parallel with our Ireland East Hospital Group. That it was provided purely at no cost to the HSE by the Beacon, and we're grateful for it. It provided it just last week. 1,000 of our staff were vaccinated there, again, by volunteer vaccinators from the Beacon.
Doesn't look good, though, does it, that staff in the Beacon, which, as we say, has not been contributing to this COVID cause at the moment, are getting vaccinated ahead of, say, those healthcare workers from Nina Hospital who, you know, went so far as to put out a video online yesterday saying they're frightened, they're seeing colleagues get sick and they don't have a date yet for their vaccination?
Yeah, and again, if I can take the two pieces separately, in terms of Beacon staff being vaccinated, the Beacon and indeed other private hospitals, there's no distinction of the vaccination of primary healthcare workers in our sequencing. So it is for private and public. Secondly, the private hospitals do carry out very important work for us, including the Beacon, which would be urgent, critical care, cancer, oncology, cardio. So protecting healthcare workers in private and public is important for us. Now, they are very small and marginal numbers in the Beacon who have been vaccinated, and that's similar in the Hermitage as well, which has been referenced. But in terms of Nina and other hospitals, we do want rapidly to get out. There is a distribution gone this morning.
Can you give them any date? Oh, it's gone to Nina. And will that cover the staff that are there? Or
No, it won't. It's the start of a distribution. But again, in all of our hospitals, we have not had the supply to cover. And look, can I just say, I appreciate everybody's frustration and the demand for vaccine. If we had 500,000 this weekend, I know we could distribute them and vaccinate them, but we have to prioritise the supply that we have at the moment.
Okay, can I just say, I have a statement in from the Beacon Hospital. It refers there, as you said yourself, that that vaccination centre was offered to HSE healthcare workers and free of charge, at no cost to the state, no contract is in place, all work has been carried out as a goodwill gesture. But in relation to the point you were making, you had some very strong words to say about them there and their refusal to sign up to this deal. They say that while engagement is ongoing with the HSC regarding a new centralised arrangement, the Beacon Hospital is of the view that it can treat more public and private patients through its existing arrangements rather than through an additional new agreement. So there's that there. I just want to move on from that, Paul, because I wanted to ask you about the IT system. Mm-hmm. I think people are really shocked that there are people with pens and papers handling the admin of this in nursing homes and in other settings. Why don't we have a fully functioning IT system for this? Why wasn't it procured back in the summer when we had time and space to do this?
Yeah, well, just a couple of things. We have procured a new national immunisation system, which is a partnership with IBM and Salesforce.
When was that?
It was procured in December. Quite accelerated procurement.
Why was that only done in December?
Yeah, and I understand, and the people would say, why didn't you do it in July, as you just asked, and that's a fair question. The reality of it is, Katie, the specification of the system, the requirements of the system, the knowledge about what kind of vaccines we might be getting, how you would register people, what the sequence on who gets registered, most of that information became available extremely late in December. So, you know, you do need a base level of information to develop the system. So there are three elements of the system, just to reassure your listeners. There is the about how we record the data of the people being getting the vaccine. There is the actual data on the vaccine itself that we have to record. And there is a portal, which is the third element that comes into play.
Where you book your vaccination.
Well, equally where the GPs will be able to start to register people. And then, you know, it is just in terms of paper or pens and paper, you know, nursing homes where we are doing this in long-term care facilities, they wouldn't be naturally integrated with the HSE system. So we are uploading data through spreadsheets into the central system. That's where we are at the moment. That will improve as we move into the wider mass vaccination and we have our portal available.
Okay, I'm going to actually leave that there, Paul Reid, because I'm watching the clock and we want to get our panel in on this. But I want to thank you for joining us today from Athlone, Paul Reid there, the CEO of the HSE. Go back to that vaccination priority group issue. Maybe if I bring you in, Minister Hildegard Lockton, are you surprised to hear that only 10% of those who have been vaccinated to date are those most vulnerable in nursing homes?
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge what Paul has said there in relation to the work that has taken place in relation to the vaccination rollout. And I think to acknowledge as well in that Ireland is currently one of the first or second in Europe in relation to that rollout. And as Paul has said, this will depend on the supply. And we have been assured, government has been assured, that the resources will be there for the rollout. The only anything that will hinder the rollout of this vaccination will be the supply. And I think he has clearly outlined the enormous work that is taking place in relation to the rollout of those mass vaccination centres across the country, and the work that's been finalised with the other 12 centres as well. So this is about targeting the most vulnerable, the nursing homes, the frontline workers, and I think we could hear the assurance there and the intention to roll this out as quickly and as effectively and safely as possible.
We got an email into the programme this morning saying from a nursing home manager describing themselves as very frustrated, saying that they don't begrudge the healthcare workers access to the vaccine, but our nursing home residents being forgotten again, a second scandal. Our health services regard for older people in nursing homes is a disgrace. Breed Smith.
Well, I think there's a real problem here, because I know Paul Reid answers the questions and very carefully answers them, but he doesn't really answer them either. So, for example, on the question of the immunisation database, which is holding up the speed at which the vaccine can be distributed.
They would say, just to be clear, Paul Reid would say it isn't, that it's the supply is the only thing that's actually holding
up. I'll come back to the supply in a minute, but we have heard witnesses saying it takes a long time to record the data while you give it to one patient before you move on to the next. This was flagged up to the department by the public health doctors, who have threatened, or not threatened, but have taken a ballot for strike action over their particular situation. But this was one of the issues that they flagged up very clearly. We have never had a national immunisation database, and they should have known, as you quite rightly asked them, why wasn't this prepared for last summer? And I don't think the answer you got was sufficient. And in relation to the nursing homes, yes, they were forgotten about and treated very badly the last time. Their staff struggled to get a hold of PPE. People were making PPE and sending them in. We remember those horror stories, and the rate of debt was actually horrendous. So there should be a priority put on them. Having said that, we do have to vaccinate all our frontline workers, because they're the ones who are playing a superhuman effort, if you ask me, in trying to keep the rest of us safe. And they need that reassurance as well. Can I just say a word about the supply issue before we move off it? I think that there is a debate happening globally now about the question of patent. And we need to argue at the WHO, at the levels of the UN, etc., that these vaccines should be made patent free. This is a global pandemic, and public health should come first. And any country who can get a hold of a patent free vaccine type should be allowed to reproduce it themselves. And we are very well placed to do this. We've one of the biggest pharmaceutical industries in Europe, and we could be producing, in particular, the AstraZeneca vaccine. If we win this argument, it happened before with South Africa arguing for patent-free reproduction of generic drugs in relation to HIV/AIDS. We need to do this urgently on a global scale, and Ireland should be to the front of arguing for it.
Okay, Kathleen, can I ask you, were you reassured by what Paul Reid was telling us there in terms of the plans for the rollout from now on?
Unfortunately, no, I wasn't. And I have to say, I think we were in this situation since last March. We've nearly had a year to plan in relation to vaccines, but also in relation to staffing, hospital capacity, bed capacity, ICU capacity. So, I mean, we've had years of underinvestment in our health service, and it wasn't in a good state before COVID. COVID has made it extremely worse. That's even an understatement. But what really is frustrating for people is the fact that we had time to plan to a certain extent for staffing issues, for capacity issues, for ICU capacity issues. That clearly wasn't done. And talking now about implementing, you know, the plan around the vaccine, that should have been done as well. We all knew that the whole world was working towards a vaccine. We were hopeful that there was going to be a vaccine. So why were we not putting those plans in place, including whatever IT systems need to be put in place? It's a bit late in the day to be saying it now, but I think it's really important to make the point as well that, you know, in relation to that Ireland's call, remember last April that was brought out. There's about 1,400 staff that were never contacted. Doctors, nurses, healthcare assistants. Why aren't they being drafted in? Why aren't they being hired to help with the staffing issue? We have an example in our own hospital in that services Carlow and Kilkenny. It's a 15-bed ICU, state-of-the-art, brilliant facility. They only have the staff to manage 6 beds. So why can't they look at that list of 1,400 people that applied, that are obviously trained in health services.
And mind you, I doubt look, very many would be trained to the level as we know, no, but very highly even, skilled.
Maybe not, but there is people there ICU. That are nurses, that are doctors, that are healthcare assistants, and all of those jobs are required. Staff are absolutely exhausted. They're gone past the point of breaking point. And it's very frustrating that measures aren't being taken in relation to that and in relation to bed capacity. We published a plan, our health spokesperson, last August about, you know, fast build modular facilities to deal with ICU capacity, and none of this was done. And we really need to look at that. And the last point I just want to make, Katie, is in relation to the private hospitals. Paul Reid said they are 30% roughly capacity. We need to be using that at 100%. We're gone beyond crisis mode. We're constantly here and everyone has to do their part. And for the public, it's very frustrating when you are doing your part, staying home.
Can I just
home,
put that before doing we all move on to you, Hildegard Nocton?
And you see they're only taking up 30%
of
that
capacity. Do we
need
to go back to that deal already and say 30% is not going to cut it?
I will answer that. And can I just say, in relation to the preparation, there's been significant increase in bed capacity put in over the last few months in relation to dealing with this. In relation to ICU capacity, you're correct, Katie, that ICU nurses and the staff, it's a very specialised skill set. And there has been huge preparation, extra PPE, oxygen, all of the resources put in place. The fact is that we have, three variants now, an increase in the numbers, and it is up to all of us to do what we can collectively. So I just want to knock that in the head because Kathleen has said that nothing has been done, which is absolutely false. In relation to the
enough has not been done. If you were listening to Paul Reid, you'd know that yourself.
Kathleen.
And I don't want to politicise this because we're in a crisis here, and it's important to acknowledge the work that has happened. And I think it's important to stress that and not to politicise it. In relation to the private hospitals, just very briefly, Katie, in relation to your question, and Paul outlined it there as well, that if more than 30% capacity is required, that will be sought. And the message that we need to get out here, and not to scaremonger, we all know what we have to do to reduce this virus right across the country. Our health workers are working furiously fast. We're also doing relatively well in relation to this vaccination rollout, and it's important to acknowledge that. And as Paul Reid has said, supply will be the issue, not the putting in place of resources. We have huge expertise within our public health system. Doctors, nurses who are well qualified and well experienced in administering vaccines.
I'm sorry to cut across to you, Minister, but I do have to take this break.
Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, before we move on from this, I just want to play a short clip of the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, who was on the News at One yesterday. He was asked if a further, if in future the government would be in lockstep with NPHET in deciding what restrictions should be in place. Here's how he responded.
You know, we'll always listen to and consider the advice, but ultimately, government has to make a decision. And, you know, the advice last time, let's not forget, was to move from level 5 to level 3. I'm not sure we would take that advice if that were advice was given again, because that turned out to be too quick.
That was Leo Varadkar talking to Brian Dobson yesterday. Hildegard Nocton, why is Leo Varadkar suggesting that we are where we are currently because the government followed poor advice from NPHET?
I don't think that's what he said, in fairness. I think it's very easy to look back in hindsight if we knew where we were going to be right now in relation to the decisions that we made.
He said, be clear, because there's a lot of misinformation floating around on this issue this week. He said there that the NPHET advised to move to level 3 and that we wouldn't follow that advice again because that turned out to be too quick. But of course, we all know that that's not what NPHET advised. NPHET advised to move to level 3, but to keep hospitality closed. And if you were to open hospitality, you couldn't allow household visits. And we allowed, the government decided to allow both. So is that not a serious misrepresentation of the advice that was offered to the government in December?
No, that's not the full picture. And again, I don't like going back in time, but if you do need the clarification on it, I can give it. So what actually happened back in December was that NPHET advised that household visits would be permitted from December the 2nd, and the government decided that we would hold back on opening up household visits until the 18th of December and instead open up hospitality. But look...
NPHET specifically advised against that, against opening up hospitality. hospitality.
Yes, and I don't want... Look, but they were saying that household visits could happen from the 2nd of December.
If so hospitality stayed closed.
Yes, so we made the decision to not allow household visits until the 18th of December. But really,
the point I wanted to ask you, Minister, with respect,
every single decision, Katie, back over time, and none of the modelling was pointing to the scenario we are currently in. None of the NPHET modelling, and that is not a criticism of NPHET. It's not a criticism of anybody.
What Leo Varadkar said yesterday certainly sounded like a criticism of NPHET.
What is very clear to us all, and the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach, and many of my colleagues have said that this virus is constantly changing, constantly evolving, constantly ripping up all of our plans. The NPHET modelling didn't predict the current situation we're in, and that is not a criticism of NPHET. This is the nature of the virus.
You're not going to address what the Taoiseach said yesterday, Hildegard.
I have addressed it, Katie. And what we need to do now is to all knuckle down and do what we all have to do to reduce this virus and to ensure that we get it under control, and that we do. Government always takes the best advice, makes decisions on the best advice that we have at the time. Again, if we could make a decision and look back through today's lens,
Constantly cut across you, particularly when you're not in the studio with me, Minister. But it's just we have a lot to get through, and a lot of time is moving on very quickly. Brie, please.
Well, I mean, when Leo Varadkar says the last advice from NPHET was to go to level 3 and all the rest of it. Actually, I've written down the dates here. The last advice from NPHET, the last two pieces of advice, on the 21st of December, they called for immediate implementation of level 5. On the 23rd of December, they re-emphasised that we need a full suite on level 5. When did the government introduce it? The 31st of December. Now, what Hildegard or Leo Varadkar won't acknowledge is that what we're seeing now in terms of the crisis we're in is the bitter fruits of their decision to ignore NPHET advice that originally said, as Katie pointed out, don't do both. Don't open up hospitality and allow people into each other's homes. But you chose to do both. Okay. And some of us in the Dáil saw it coming and warned you that we'd be at this place. And you haven't even nationalised the hospitals, as the Irish Nurses and Midwives Union have called for. You need to nationalise the private hospitals to get on top of this.
I'll cut across you now, Brie, but I do have to bring you a further statement from the Beacon Hospital in response to those very strong words from the CEO of the HSE, Paul Reid, earlier. They say that the Beacon Hospital is currently treating more public patients than HSE agreement envisages or asks for, more than any other private hospital, saying public patients currently occupy over 50% of our intensive care unit. Approximately 20% of all surgery over the past 4 months has been on public patients through service level agreements with individual hospitals. It says the reason we do not wish to sign the current agreement with the HSE is that giving clinical control to the HSE during surge one agreement, the hospital was actually left 70% empty. As we are at full capacity currently, we cannot allow this to happen again. So that's the response from Michael Cullen, the CEO of the Beacon Hospital, to Paul Reid there.